Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. The dark silhouette. You never quite know what you see at night. Shadows iron out defining features. I wasn't sure what I saw that night, and I don't think I'll ever be sure. But I know I would have forgotten it by now had the events following it not have happened. In high school, my friend Jack lived a few blocks away from my parents' house. After school, we would cruise on over to his place and hang out, since his mom wasn't home until 5. Most nights, we would just chill out until she got home. If it was dark out, she'd usually offer me a ride. It was a nice little setup. One night, Jack and I hung out much later. It was almost 11 or 12 by the time I thought about heading home. Tired as shit, but not lazy enough to ask for a ride, I decided to walk. Begrudgingly, I headed out into the nighttime drizzle. The walk back was always a little off-putting. A thick forest took up one entire side of the road, and the other was an empty field with a single dim orange traffic light. Most nights, it didn't bother me. It was actually kind of peaceful. I like solitude. But tonight was a little different. The night air was still. Not one sound could be heard except for the slight pat of my feet on the asphalt. Not even a bird chirp came from the woods. You know that weird tickle you get on the back of your neck when someone's watching you? Yeah, I had that. Laughing it off and trying hard not to be a wimp, I kept going. Before coming to my last turn, I noticed something ahead. Running into someone was not totally unheard of, but kind of rare in this part of town. It's a quiet little suburb, skewing towards middle age and above. Kind of pausing to make out who it was, I was immediately drawn to how strange they were walking. Shambling up a grassy hill, the person moved almost ape-like towards me. He had long, slender legs that bent really weird as they walked. His torso was weird, too, kind of small. His arms hung and flopped freely at his sides. I wondered if this guy was drunk, so I kind of stopped to look at him. The person lumbered towards a streetlight, still walking in the grass. I don't know why, but my heart started to race. I'm not an easily scared guy, but something about this was scaring me. For as big and as haphazardly as he walked, the night was still silent. My breathing increased as he got closer. I could not take my eyes off of him. I let out a little cough, and instantly it froze. Though I couldn't make out any features, I suddenly felt a very heavy feeling. I felt like it was looking at me, crouching down like a jungle cat. Whatever this was continued to stare. I felt frozen, unable to move. All of a sudden, I heard it. The one noise to break the silent night. The noise that haunts me to this day. I felt it more than I heard it. It was a hiss. But like a hiss layered on top of another hiss. And another hiss. And a garbage disposal. It was one of the most disturbing events I've ever had. Scared shitless, I still felt unable to move. It cocked its head like it was thinking, then took off down the road. It ran faster than I've ever seen a car run down my road. I chased after it to see where it went. I lost sight of it right in front of my house. Unsettled, but still not entirely sure what I saw, I ran quickly inside and locked the door. I wish this story ended here. I really fucking wish it did. I'm not a supernatural person. I don't believe or like or even want to know about that kind of stuff. I know that's what everyone who wants to get you to believe a story says. But I'm not just fucking saying that. I mean it. I swear to Christ I do. I sound crazy even talking about this stuff, but here we go. The next couple of weeks were weird. I didn't really know what to do with my terrifying encounter. None of my friends were into that kind of thing, and I probably would have been laughed out of the group if I had brought it up, so I kept it to myself. But I definitely developed a fear of going out at night. I always made sure to leave Jack's at a decent time, and I tried to stick to well-lit rooms. Nothing notable happened for a few weeks, but then it started. It was midnight, and I'd just woken from sleep, my eyes fluttering open, I stared at my ceiling. Noticing a peculiar shadow, I looked down to see what it was. Standing directly at the foot of the bed was a long, slender shadow. One arm was up, almost as if it were reaching towards or pulling away from my feet. I don't know why I didn't make a sound, but I slammed my eyes shut. I slammed them shut for a good long time. When I opened them, the shadow was gone. I couldn't sleep that night. This started becoming a regular occurrence. My nights were rough, as I was either terrified from or of seeing them. My silhouettes, I called them. Sometimes there was just the one, or sometimes he'd have friends. One time there was a silhouette in each of the corners in my room, their heads tilted at unhuman angles. I started to accept it. I'd wake up from a nap in my lazy boy and they'd be surrounding me. I could feel them walking around. I'd stay the night at Jack's house, and from the window of the living room, I'd see them outside, frantically pacing outside the glass, as if they were unable to get in, but desperate to find me. It was really, really, really fucking traumatic. I refused to tell anyone, my male pride getting in my way. Plus, they never hurt me. They never moved anything or touched me. I didn't feel they were benevolent, but I didn't feel much malice either. They were just there, watching. If I had to put a number on it, I usually saw them 2 to 3 times a week, though for a while it was almost every night. As I got older, things died down. I'd only see them once a week, once a month, once a year. Then I didn't see them anymore. I still felt them, or I guess feared them, but it wasn't as bad anymore. A couple of years later, I met this girl. Her name was Lindsay. I was pretty interested in her for a while, and she agreed to go out for coffee with me. After postponing all day, her and I decided to still get coffee, but at 6 o'clock at night. With us both being wired as hell, we ended up hanging out until 1 or 2, just kind of shooting the shit in parking lots. After deciding to go for a ride, we drove out into the country. She told me about a lot of weird happenings in her life, and I started to think about mine, not wanting to be that dick that cuts her off and trying to avoid actual emotional intimacy, I abstained from telling her my stories. We started driving down a road when I started to feel a heaviness, a weight. The air felt heavy. We hit a patch of the road where trees or something made sure no moonlight trickled through. It was just dark. Lindsay turned to me and said she felt a weird pressure. I just nodded. This felt all too familiar. There were no houses on either side of the road, just thick forest. We had no idea where we were. Lindsay nodded towards her window, and I brought the car to a stop. Deep in the woods, the only thing illuminated by light was a very dilapidated abandoned house. Deciding there was no better thing to do on a first date than go into an old house, Lindsay and I parked the car and walked up. The house was some weird shit. The basement had a door in it, barred shut, with like 18 locks. My detail-oriented brain picked up on quite a few bullet holes in the walls. In the backyard, a complex of old farm buildings dotted the landscape, as well as several old cars. Most were filled with things like old lamps, books, boxes, and trash. As Lindsay and I creeped towards one of them, we noticed the door swinging just a bit. We went inside and were kind of horrified. It was a big, empty wooden building, with one end being walled off by metal bars. Inside was a toilet seat fastened to a bucket, and couch cushion. Whatever this place was, it was pretty fucking weird. However, I was emboldened by the attractive woman on my arm, and decided to press on. As we got further into the compound, we wondered why it was abandoned, or where this was. My town is pretty small, and it sits right on the edge of a big expanse of nothingness, just open woods and hillbillies. Whatever this place was, it was weird. A few notable finds were a room with at least 100 burned Bibles, a noose hanging from a tree, and an eye of Ra painted on the side of the building. Chalking this up to weird finder, more than likely an off-season haunted house, I grabbed Lindsay by the hand and walked her back. That's when I saw it. A light that was not on the first time we walked through was now on. It was dim, and I did not see any power cords going to it. Under it, I saw a dark shape. As my eyes adjusted, I realized what I was looking at. My silhouettes were here. It stood taller than usual, but just as skinny. It swayed ever so gently in the breeze. Lindsay saw it too and grabbed my hand. Have you ever seen the show Lost? The awful one? You know, those moments when they're in the jungle and they hear quite almost inaudible whispering? You probably will believe I'm full of shit, but I heard that. Whispering, almost mechanical whispering. It was all around us. I didn't feel like it was coming from the shadow, but I heard it. Oh God, did I hear it. Thankfully, it was not staring. It just looked like it was looking around, like it missed me. I know that sounds stupid, but it's what I felt. I grabbed Lindsay's hand and looked at her. She was frozen with terror, staring directly at it. I nodded to her and took off into the woods and back towards the car. I turned for a second and looked. Lumbering with a sad, desperate gait, my silhouette chased after us. I ran faster. We got to the car, jumped in, and took off like a bat out of hell. Later, she asked me if I heard it. Do you mean this whispering? Unprovoked, she responded. No, the hiss. And proceeded to give me a detailed description, an identical description as the one I gave earlier. She didn't and still doesn't know my story. I don't know why I'm telling you this story. It's not to scare you, not to make you think I'm a liar or that I had a paranormal encounter, but because I'm hoping someone might know what this was or what I encountered. I don't see them anymore. That was the last time. But why did I see them? I don't know. I wonder if I ever will know. What she wants me to do. I lived in a small Midwestern town, the kind of town where everything focused around the local high school and the football team was like gods among mortals. Like any other small town in America, we had our local ghost stories. Everyone knew about the daycare, an old daycare run by a lonely old man out of his home. A normal place for someone to leave their kids until it was ravaged by a terrible fire in the 90s. The daycare burned to a shattered husk with the old man still inside. He never fled the building during the fire. He trapped a small girl in the basement and broke her arm, holding her inside as the house burned around them. No one ever knew what caused the fire, why the man snapped and trapped the girl in the house. We grew up with our parents telling us this story, but once we hit junior high, we just attributed it to being a simple ghost story. One night 6 years ago, we decided we would see for ourselves. We were only 13, the kind of age where you want to get into dumb trouble for no other reason than being young. I stayed at my cousin's house because the daycare was only a mile or two down the road. We waited for our parents to go to sleep, then quietly slipped out the front door and got on our bikes. We rode quietly to the daycare, ready for a night of simple scares and adventure. Approaching the dilapidated, overgrown, ancient house at night was far more intimidating than our daytime scouting trips down the road had led on. Against the twilight sky, something about the place seemed sinister. The ash-scarred walls and broken windows told the story of a dark place that held no room for the living. Setting our phones to record, we waded through the overgrown jungle of a lawn, often through bushes and grass that draped well over our heads. Stepping over the last rusted well pump, we came to the back door. Hanging from one hinge and falling apart at the frame, calling it a door may have been a bit of a stretch. After a stalemate of you first, no, you go first, it was decided that, being the guy, of course, I would have to be the first to slide in the dark gap between the old door and the peeling wall. Under any circumstances, the inside of a crumbling, burnt-down daycare is an eerie sight in itself. The floor of the broken tiled room was littered with a variety of damaged old toys in various states of disintegration. A disfigured rocking horse here, a mutilated stuffed animal there, and one hidden object in the corner, cloaked by a pristine, clean white sheet and clustered among half-burnt dolls and neglected puzzles. The sheet looked very oddly out of place among the battlefield of decaying children's toys. Of course, we had to see what was underneath. We crossed the room, stepping over toys, and made our way to the tall, narrow, cloaked object in the corner. After another round of "you do it," we tore the shroud from the unknown object. Underneath revealed an old style of freestanding mirror, cased in dark wood, perfectly pristine and free of blemishes. We could see ourselves in the reflection. I'm short for my age and thin from regular cross-country and soccer practices, with bushy red hair that never cooperates with my efforts to tame it. My cousin was even shorter than me. Barely scraping 4.5 feet, she had long brown hair with just a hint of red. She's in good shape as well from volleyball and outdoor activities. Both of us were wearing a pair of our black Nike shorts and different black shirts. It always felt cooler sneaking on what we considered night camo. I could see the look of fright reflected in my freckled face. The mirror created a feeling of uneasiness between my cousin and I, and we silently agreed to throw the sheet back over the clear reflection of ourselves standing in the ravaged room. Stepping back from the mirror, we turned our phone camera lights to the doorway to the next room. Stepping over a sideways chair and into the next room, what immediately caught our attention was a second white sheet in the corner of the second room, identical and as strangely clean as the first. Crossing what must have been a living room at some point, we tore down the second sheet. An identical mirror lay beneath the identical sheet. This time we quickly left the room, leaving the sheet thrown carelessly across the one half of the couch that was still somewhat standing in the room. We left the room quickly and found ourselves in a hallway. At this end of this hallway stood another clean white sheet. We soon realized that the same mirror stood in every single room of the house, covered by the same clean shroud. We no longer had to look under the sheet to know what it was. We just avoided them altogether. Neither of us liked the feeling we got when we were looking at the mirrors. We spent some time exploring the house, but the sight of the sheet watching us from the corner never got less spine-tingling. Eventually, after winding our way up and down crumbling stairs, carefully testing each step, and climbing through decrepit rooms of ashes and furniture skeletons, we discovered a set of massive heavy wooden storm doors set into a hastily poured cement floor. For whatever reason, the doors had been built into the house, walled into a small courtyard, instead of being placed outside the house like most storm cellars of the time. My next decision, I could only look back on with regret and dismay. The next 10 minutes would ruin my life forever. We climbed down into the basement, the same place where an old man and a young girl with a broken arm had burned to death so many years ago. The cellar was bare. 3 walls of cold, weathered brick, 1 wall of rotting wood strapped together with iron bands. Set into the wall was a heavy wooden door, chained shut. Fear pumping through our bodies, we crossed the room, hugging the wall and brushing through spider webs, shining away the path with our handheld lights, still filming our late-night adventure. Then, with a cry of alarm and pain, my cousin grasped at her chin that she had cracked on something that was protruding from the eroding brick wall. We stopped and shined the lights down to see what we had drawn blood from her shin. Part of the brick wall was falling apart. A few bricks had already cracked on the floor, and even more, like the one that had cut my cousin's shin, were angled out from the wall, ready to join the others on the ground. The bricks were falling away from a small hole in the wall. From where we were standing, we could just barely see an old trunk behind the brick. Pulling away the last of the clinging brick, I dragged out the dark, unadorned trunk and set it at the base of the wall. It wasn't too large. I'd pulled it from the wall on my own while my cousin nursed her shin. The wooden trunk was covered in a layer of what felt like very old cured leather, falling apart at every seam. Holding our breath, we each popped a latch and slowly raised the lid. The trunk was filled to the brim with fine black sand, bottom to top, very fine small particles of pitch black dust. Reaching into the chest, we began to dig through and see if anything else was held inside the hidden box. Out from the sand, my cousin pulled out a thin black sheet. Interest piqued, we looked away from the chest to examine our find. We moved the sheet around trying to figure out if there was anything more to it than just a weird black film sheet, when suddenly the light from a camera caught the sheet just right, illuminating an x-ray of a small girl's broken arm. With a shout of alarm, we both dropped our hold on the film and looked up, terrified just in time, to hear a series of ear-splitting crashes begin from upstairs. These crashes were quickly followed by a massive outburst of frantic rattling from the wooden doors set in the non-brick wall of the cellar. Not hesitating a second, my cousin and I instantly bolted up the cellar stairs, not bothering to close the doors behind us. We were scrambling up the steps so fast that I didn't see where I was going and tripped when I reached the top of the steps. Putting my hand out in front of me to break my fall, I felt a sharp stabbing pain as a piece of broken glass sliced into my hand, the source of the shattering noise. I looked up into the mirror in the corner of this room. The covering that previously had been draped across the pane was nowhere to be seen. The glass of the mirror had been shattered to pieces and flung about the floor of the room as if in a fit of rage. Not a fragment of glass remained in the frame. More terrified than ever, we tore from the house as if hell itself was on our heels. We ran through room after room, stepping through broken glass in every room as we saw shattered mirror after shattered mirror, the whole time silently praying for the growing noise from the basement to cease, too busy running for exclamations of fear. When we finally escaped the daycare, we flew back to my cousin's house, not saying a word, too afraid of what sound might bring upon us. Pulling into the driveway on our bikes, we were greeted by my cousin's dog, a dog I had known for years, a dog I had petted and played fetch with when he was a puppy, a dog that was now staring at us, teeth bared, a low rumbling growl forming in its throat. As I approached and got off my bike, the dog struck, biting into my sweatshirt and whipping his head back and forth, tearing the thick fabric. My cousin screamed as it got loose and ran as my cousin's dog tore after me across the street, running right through the electric fence they had installed to train her. The commotion woke my aunt and uncle, who came running out of the house. Running out of the house in his boxers and grabbing the dog by the collar, my uncle got a hold of the lunging animal while crying from the sheer terror of the evening. We tried to explain ourselves to my pissed-off, half-asleep aunt. "We just wanted to check out the daycare house," I desperately tried to explain, periodically interrupted by my cousin's barely audible exclamations through her uncontrollable sobbing. At first we were yelled at and berated for sneaking out, but soon my aunt saw how genuinely terrified the two of us were, and she softened up a bit to hear what had scared us so much. Obviously, she didn't believe a word we said until we remembered that we had recorded the whole thing. Hands shaking, we brought out our phones and played the video. The video showed us wading through the yard and entering the destroyed toy room, and even showed us approaching the mirror in the corner. But as soon as the sheet was ripped off, the recording cut out to nothing but a high-pitched whine and black and gray static. We got over our grounding, a month of no TV and no going out. We were just happy the whole thing was over. It was probably about 2 years before I realized how wrong we were. It began simply at first. Doors would be open when I remembered closing them. Things would fall from the shelves of my desk that night. Innocent things that I would brush off as forgetfulness or leave to a draft from an open window. I did open the window, right? I must have forgot, always at night. And then the visions came, and there was no doubt in my mind that I was no longer alone in my own head. Every dream began the same way, always in the basement, always with a chest of black sand, always with her, or it, climbing out of it. She would approach me with a skin the sick color of stagnant creek, one arm longer than the other and twisted at a weird angle from her body, like a second elbow, teeth rotting from her jaw, long black hair hanging just around where her face would have been. Oh God, why could I never see her face? She was horrible. Even in a dream, I could tell her being was wrong. She would whisper things to me, horrible things. She would ask me to do terrible things. It started off with pushing a kid off a swing, or knocking someone's book out of their hands and walking away. But then her demands got more and more sinister. My actions went beyond cruel pranks to malicious intent. I destroyed personal items, hurt classmates, and embarrassed teachers. I didn't enjoy doing it, but she told me she would punish me, and she never left me alone. After telling me what she wanted me to do, she would then turn. She would turn and point across the room to a pale white sheet in the corner of the dark cellar. The sheet would fall, revealing the familiar mirror standing alone in the corner. Through the mirror, she could show me horrible things that would happen. She showed me how she could make bad things happen to people, how she could make bad things happen to me. Of course, I often awoke in the night screaming about my vivid night terrors. The image of the faceless girl still burning bright in my mind. When my parents wouldn't listen, I tried to talk to my classmates. They laughed at me. They said that I was going crazy. So I began to talk about the terrible things that I saw that were going to happen to them. Sometimes it was in the immediate future, like falling off the monkey bars that day at recess, or tripping and skinning a knee running to first base in kickball. But sometimes I could see things that were happening to them when they were older, and those sights were always much worse than skinned knees. Sometimes in those sights I saw myself, older and very dark. I did things to these people in their future. I killed, I cut, and I enjoyed it. After cutting a friend's cat's throat with a knife I stole from home, it was finally time my teachers spoke to my parents, said they were concerned. Other students thought that I was strange. Even classmates who had been my friends avoided me, called me crazy. I couldn't help it, though. I just wanted her voice to stop. I wanted someone to believe me. I tried explaining everything, so of course, they asked my cousin. I thought I could talk to her about it, but she denied everything, said we were just kids and made the whole thing up. But I could see it in her eyes when she spoke to me. I could hear the voice in her head, too. I don't know how she fought it. Maybe it wasn't as strong for her as it was in my head. Then they took me to doctors. I didn't want the medicine they gave me. It made me feel fuzzy, and they told me I couldn't go to school anymore. A man in a white coat told me that I would be staying with him for a while, but the dreams never stopped. I just learned to silently endure my torture, because that's what they wanted to hear. They wanted to think their medicine and their therapy got the faceless girl out of my head. But I could hear her laughing the whole time, laughing at my misery and suffering, feeding off of it like a demonic leech. Eventually, I got to go home. When they felt I was sufficiently drugged up enough to function in society, I had to go to school after all, but my parents kept me from the others. They homeschooled me because they were too afraid having me around other kids would bring back out my urges to harm others. They just couldn't understand. For a while, I spent my time using my computer to search for a reason behind what was happening. She told me she didn't like that. She told me to stop. She made me stop. I did learn a few things. I learned that people used to believe that mirrors could trap spirits from leaving a place. People used to cover all the mirrors in a house when someone died in that place so that they couldn't get stuck behind and miss their chance to move on. I learned of demons that fed through the fear generated by stories of terrible acts, like burning daycares. I could feel her inside me just hanging on, latched into my head like a leech. In many of the paranormal stories I read, people said they grew used to the spirit being attached to them. I never could. Every moment awake was filled with the whispers from my dreams. The images I saw in the mirror would never leave me. She tortured me, told me I wasn't the first, and I wouldn't be the last. She told me that she lived through stories. She found her way in through fear. She fed in the night. She lived on insanity, despair, hopelessness, and isolation. She was never attached to the daycare. She attached to the story of the daycare and the fear that it brought on in two young children. She used our fear, our apprehension of being faced with the paranormal, and that's how she latched in. She's moved from host to host for years, latching in from one story to the next. The fear her stories create is her first chance to get into your head. She never leaves once she gets in. I think she is almost done with me. She's fed as much as she could. She should be moving on soon. Whatever that means will be left of me. That's why I'm writing this. You have to see. You have to know that it's not a game. No temporary rush of adrenaline or fear is worth the chance that she could latch on to you. God forgive me. I think she wanted me to write this. Spider Hall. When I was 5 years old, my family moved from Fort Wayne, Indiana, to a small town in the middle of Vermont. The place we moved into was an old Victorian turn-of-the-century house, painted an odd shade of green I could only best describe as falling somewhere between olive and pine. Many of the houses in town had titles, possibly carried down from long ago when they belonged to the local college. A military school my father had accepted the position of dean at, which is why we moved in the first place. Our house had a small plaque by the side door that read Spider Hall. It was a rather daunting name, and my siblings and I all expressed our concerns about living in a house with such a title. Fortunately, the house never really lived up to the name, but it helped add to the atmosphere that surrounded that place. The house was situated on a hill upon another hill. The street, Spring Street, was so steep that for years I wasn't strong enough to pedal my bike more than 20 feet up the slope before I had to hop off and walk the rest of the way. Our driveway was halfway up the street, even steeper than the street itself, which made parking difficult. I remember once the parking brake on my sister's VW Beetle failed, and we found it the following morning in the ditch across the road. There was a flat part to the land the house was built upon, but all of that flat area was occupied by a mass of wet, boggy marsh, thickly settled with reeds, ferns, and frogs. There was a small tree with a tire swing right at the edge of the swamp, but we learned days after moving in that the rope had rotted away when my older brother tried it out and ended up flying, tire and all, into the muck. The vegetation of the swamp was so thick and tall that if you stood at the edge of the water, you could not see the other side, despite there being a sheer rise and a rock wall that marked the edge of the property. Just ahead 3 years, I was 8, and it was August. The days were downcast, heavy cloud cover, with a type of drizzle that felt more like a layer of slime covering you if you stood out in it. I had a friend over, Christopher, and between he and I and my two brothers, we were driving my mother insane, so she stuck us in our raincoats and galoshes and kicked us out of the house, telling us to go burn it off in the yard. It was my older brother, Jack, who came up with the idea of exploring the swamp. Since we were already decked out in gear made to protect us from the wet, we thought it was a perfect chance to traipse into the reeds and ferns and see what was in there. Jack led the way, armed with a heavy stick he swung back and forth in front of him like a machete. He snapped and tore a path for the rest of us to follow. Chris was ahead of me, and my little brother George was last. We marched straight into the center of that swamp like jungle explorers, the muck and ooze sucking at our boots and trying to pull us down with each step. 15 minutes into our adventure, my boot got stuck pretty solid. The mud squelched and slurped, but refused to let go, and I just did not have the strength to pull my foot free. Jack and Chris trudged on ahead, oblivious, and George shuffled past me with a curious glance but silent diligence. As they disappeared into the scenery, I reached down and tried to get a grip on the wet, rubbery surface of my boot, but couldn't find a handhold. I ended up stuffing my hand up to the wrist beneath the surface of the muddy water and grabbing up the laces. A good yank freed me, but set me off balance, and I fell backward onto my ass in the water. There was an instant sharp pain in my leg causing me to yell, and when I arose I found that my pant leg was torn by a snapped branch and I was bleeding from a nasty-looking gash. I didn't think it would be wise to continue playing in the dirty swamp and possibly get some sort of infection. I struggled to turn around and find my way back to the edge of the swamp, yelling for the rest of the group to let them know I was hurt. When I finally got back to the house, my mother was on the side porch waiting for me, having heard my cries. The cut wasn't deep, but due to the rain, it had gotten my pant leg good and bloody and looked awful at first glance. I was treated to a hot cocoa with marshmallow after a painful cleanup with rubbing alcohol, and eventually the rest of the troop came back inside, having no clue that anything had ever happened to me until they found their way back out. I don't know what I would have seen that first night, if anything, or the second night for that matter, but the third night, after our jaunt into the swamp, it was unbearably hot, which led to my parents opening the window in our bedroom to cool things down. It was late and very dark when I woke up suddenly. The house was quiet, indicating my parents had gone to bed. I could hear noises from outside through the open window, frogs and crickets mostly. I wasn't sure why I had awakened, so I just lay there in the darkness and listened to the sounds of the night and tried to get back to sleep. And I heard the sound of water sloshing. It wasn't even obvious at first. I heard it but thought nothing of it. But as I lay there, the sound became more deliberate, like something was moving through the swamp. I climbed down from the top of the bunk bed I shared with my little brother
and went to the window which looked out toward the driveway and down the slope beyond it to the swamp. I couldn't see anything. I could just hear the water splashing as something moved among the vegetation. It sounded too big to be a frog. As I stood there listening, straining my eyes to see anything, the sound of the actual frogs very suddenly stopped, and then something stepped out of the swamp. It was large and dark. That was about all the details I could give for it at first. Was it a person? It looked like a person. Man-sized, broad from the top all the way to the bottom. I was looking down at it from an angle, but I thought I could see a head. It just strode forward slowly to the edge of the swamp, then stood there. The way the moonlight reflected off of it, I could tell it was wet all over. I watched it, holding my breath, not even sure what it was. And as I watched it, I realized there was another one further along the edge of the swamp that had been standing perfectly still the entire time, and I just hadn't noticed it. Two human-sized things standing down at the edge of the swamp, not moving. The one that had been there all along suddenly seemed to shift, like it was kneeling, then I could make out a soft, greenish light at its feet, or where its feet should be. There was an arm. I could see its arm, bathed in that sickening green light as it lifted what looked like some sort of lantern up off the ground. I was certain now that it had to be a person. Then it lifted the lantern up in front of it, and I saw its face. It was like rotted vegetable. The nauseating green light made it hard to discern the color, but it was mottled and pale. Its face was swollen and smooth-looking, with hair. I think it was hair, hanging down off its head in greasy strands all over. Its mouth was open like a giant O that seemed to stretch the contours of the rest of its face, which was completely blank. As I stood there, feeling the wrenching horror of what I was seeing, I realized that it was holding the lantern out toward me. I started screaming, which woke my little brother, who also started screaming because he didn't know what was going on. As I continued screaming, the second thing lifted its arms out towards me, as if to embrace me. I got dizzy and fell over from the screaming, just as my parents came bursting into the room, afraid someone was hurt. You know how this works. I woke up the next day in my own bed, having been put there by my father. I went downstairs and told my mother what I had seen, and she told me that I'd had a nightmare. Nobody believed me. That's one thing I'll never do to my kids. If they say there's a monster, I'll do more than a cursory glance and brushing off. I know there are monsters. I was scared to go to sleep the next night, even if it had been a nightmare. It was a pretty realistic one. I'd never had a dream like that before. I lay there, listening to George snore, thinking the thing I had seen were going to come into the house and get me. Maybe they were already in my closet, waiting for me to drift off and then cover my mouth with their hands and drag me away. Eventually, I did fall asleep. You can't fight it at 8 years old, no matter how hard you try. And when I woke up, it was dark and the house was quiet. I clenched my eyes shut and tried to go back there. I didn't want to be awake now. I knew what was going to happen. It hadn't been a dream. It was happening again. The sloshing, the water splashing, the sound of frogs quickly going quiet. I knew they were out there again, and I was not going to look. And then the moaning started. It wasn't loud moaning. I thought at first that George in the bunk beneath me was sighing, but then it picked up like someone else was joining in. And another one, and another one. I had to know. Were they coming towards the house? I was shaking so bad I nearly fell off the ladder getting out of bed. I went to the open window and looked out, and as I got there, the moaning picked up even louder and more obvious and more joyous. I looked down into the swamp and nearly choked. There were five of them now, at least. The ones with the lantern stood out in the grass, slowly waving its other arm back and forth like it was beckoning to me. The rest stood in the water, arms outstretched, moaning from their gaping mouths. Their bodies and arms were black and slimy looking. I couldn't make out actual hands. There was stuff hanging off of them, dripping and gross. I didn't move or scream. Just stood there in horror and watched as each one, at its own pace, started rocking back and forth, still moaning and moving its arms out toward me and back towards its cavernous mouth. Well, finally, the scream came, and I grabbed a window and slammed it shut. George started crying. Jack started yelling from his room in the back. My father burst in again and started shaking me, thinking I was sleepwalking. I just kept screaming and pointing at the window, but he ignored my wild gestures and grabbed my head and tried to make me look at him. It wasn't until he realized I was awake that I finally looked out the window, and he frowned. I was so ecstatic by that frown, I just knew it meant that he had seen them, and that his brow was furrowed as he tried to figure out what they were. My mother came in. He told her to stay with me as he went to check outside. I wanted to jump with joy. We watched him through the window, flashlight in hand, step out into the driveway, and then make his way down the hill to the swamp. I could see the beam moving and waving around, looking at the ground. Then he came back up the hill and inside. I was calm now. My father would believe me after what he saw. But when he came back into the room, he was frowning in that "I'm not happy with you" way. It was a trick of the shadows, he said. I was imagining things. No more watching the Twilight Zone for me. If I woke up everybody again, I would be grounded. All that good stuff. His rational adult mind must have seen them going back to wherever they came from, giving me the benefit of the doubt, and gone outside and found nothing. The next day I was in a daze. My brothers gave up trying to include me in their games because I was too busy trying to figure out what to do. I wanted to go look for proof of what I had seen at the edge of the swamp, but I didn't want to go anywhere near the swamp because I knew they were in there, wanting me to come to them, and their gestures that night was perfectly clear to me. They wanted to eat me. In the end, I did nothing. I chickened out. When it was time for bed, I begged my mother to leave the window closed. George complained, but she agreed to keep them closed. With the windows closed, I couldn't hear them coming. Couldn't hear them calling. I actually slept the entire night. And the next night, and the next. I started convincing myself it had all been a dream again. What else could I do? I believed in monsters. I was 8 after all, but you still try to convince yourself that there's nothing there because otherwise you live in constant fear. It rained again, cooling things off. We didn't need the windows open to keep the house from getting too hot, so I slept a good couple of weeks. It was all forgotten. I wasn't even thinking about them anymore, which of course is when you're most guaranteed to have something happen. When I woke up that night, it wasn't because of any sound. I just had to pee. I came back from the bathroom and started to climb into bed, but then I remembered. The waking up, the open window, the things in the swamp with their bloated heads and gaping mouths and the sickly green light and, oh God, I spooked myself. I was shaking again just from thinking about it. So I had the dumb idea that the only way to make myself feel better was to go take a look and prove that it wasn't real. I went to the window and looked outside. They were standing at the edge of the swamp, a good 2 to 3 solid rows of them. They were standing in the grass beyond the edge of the swamp. They were standing at the bottom of the hill. I pressed my face to the glass to look down. They were standing in the driveway, shambling, rotted horrors, every one of them. 100 shiny, wet, bloated heads, with empty black mouths stuck forever open, greasy, black arms hanging off massive wet bodies, covered in slime and draped with weeds and mud. Their moans carried through the closed window, a chorus of horrible, glee-filled hunger. Somewhere in the crowd, I could see the dull green glow of the lantern, and then it was hefted up above the heads of the rest, and the moaning seemed to turn into a roar. My eyeball said, "Let's look at something else," so they rolled up into the back of my head, which hurt suddenly as it struck the floor. The muffled moaning filled my dreams. It was morning, and I was being shaken awake by George, who found me on the floor when he woke up. I sat at breakfast, spooning my cereal, not hungry, scared shitless. Would they eventually come inside? Could they? If they came in, my parents would hear them. But by then it'd be too late for any of us. As I sat there, my mother came inside to get a dustpan and broom, and told us that the cats had left a gift for us on the porch. I got up and went to look. There was the remains of some small animal on the porch. Our cats sometimes would try to bring things they caught inside, and when they couldn't, they'd eat it by the door and leave the entrails for us to tread in. This animal, however, had simply been torn apart. Guts, limbs, head all strewn about in the process of being swept into the pan by my mother. When I went outside to play later, I found more dead animals in the yard, beyond the driveway. Frogs, voles, mice, birds, just splattered. This is what is going to be left of me, I thought. I'd like to say that there's some climax to this tale, that I've faced off against the things in the swamp and persevered, but there isn't. I kept the windows shut. Never had the circumstance where I woke up and happened to go look out again. More small animals were found on the porch and steps and driveway every day. I knew a trail of them could be traced back to the swamp, but said nothing. Maybe the things were satiated by these small sacrifices. Eventually the weather got colder, the swamp froze up, and everything got covered in snow. I never found tracks in the snow from the swamp. Animals stopped dying a few weeks before the temperature dropped below freezing. Winter came and went. Spring came, things thawed out, and still no more fatalities among the wildlife. Perhaps they moved on. Perhaps they passed away. Perhaps they just forgot what I had introduced to them. All I can say for certain is I knew from that day forth that monsters exist, and I never set foot in the swamp again.